I'm Ivy.
I'm Rachel, and we are Swords and Sapphics, a podcast all about representation, queer media, women with a capital W, and a little bit of nonsense.
So start sharpening your swords, sip your tea, and join us as we obsess over the wonderful beings that are women.
Hello.
Hello. What are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about historical fiction and the representation of sapphics in it.
Yes.
But before we get there, shall we catch up?
Let's do it.
What have you been reading?
You know what? I want to put it out there. I'm finishing the books that I started reading last year. My current reads are slowly but surely. And don't call me Shirley.
And don't call me Shirley.
I'm cutting those numbers down. So last night I finished Shipwrecked by Olivia Date. And now I picked up The Atlas Paradox by Olivia Blake.
Any thoughts?
I have none.
No thoughts no, here today.
I mean, yeah, never. Not here. The issue with Shipwrecked I had was that it's about like co-stars and we meet them at the beginning and then 6 years later after they've already fell in love. And I really miss the little moments. I need to be fed with those little moments where they like they're falling for each other. And I really did not understood why they were together because I'd missed that. So like I enjoyed it, but it didn't make me feel what I wanted to feel.
Yeah, I get it. We were promised, like, the whole title is Shipwrecked. We were promised like a stuck together thing, but they kind of gloss over the best parts of a stuck together.
Yeah, sadly. I if the book, like, I love slow burn, give me 500 pages and more, I would dig that, but I need those little moments. That makes me just very soft.
Yeah, I'm still halfway with that one as well. I have, as much as I love Olivia Dade, I haven't had the urge to pick it up recently.
We ended at the same, we paused on the same page, actually.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. And The Atlas Paradox is the second book after The Atlas Six. It's very, there's very little plot and it's very much character driven. And I understand very little of it, but I'm enjoying it extremely. Like, all the entire magical system, I understand nothing. There was some about time travel. I understand nothing, but I'm just there for the vibes and the characters. And yeah, it's fun. It's really fun. And new words. I'm learning new words because it's such a, it's just, I don't know a bunch of these words, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
What about you? What are you reading?
I just started The Queen of Nothing. Yay. Well, I say just started. I'm halfway through.
Yeah.
What else? Yeah. We all know. I'm really, they have me by the chokehold. It's very good. Honestly, probably the best enemies to lovers I've read because they don't cave, even in this book now. We've had two books of enemies to lovers and they're still like so chaotically enemies and lovers. And it's great.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I read The Fine Print by Lauren Asher. I gave it a 4-star because it did give me feelings, especially when, look, I'm a simple woman. If the main character gets sick and he takes care of her and fears for her life, that's a 4-star read for me. The rest doesn't matter. But it is a billionaire romance and he's like the director of the theme park. And he makes them work 12-hour days. And I don't know about you, but if a man tries to make me work 12 hours a day, 5 days a week. I simply would not fall in love with him.
The thing about like millionaire and billionaire romances, like this was the first time where he actually like didn't even pay them well. And that was really surprising to me. Like I, you know what, I need them to like spoil the people around them and like be secretly incredibly generous and good and just giving their money to people that need it. And that did not happen with Rowan specifically. And it kind of, yeah, that was upsetting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's Morally Gray and then there's Rowan who did not see anybody as people until he fell in love. And especially because she has a Down syndrome sister, so there's a good part at the end where like they've tried to focus on making the theme park more accessible to disabled characters. So maybe it's not really something to flaunt that he never thought of disabled people before. Maybe that's not something that's not a path you should go down. Yeah, there was a lot to unpack, as with most heterosexual romances. There seems to be billionaires seem to be synonymous with toxic masculinity, and I enjoy neither capitalism or misogyny, so it's hard for me. However, I will be reading the next two because Ivy told me that the second one is a marriage of convenience, and the third one, he's an alcoholic and I'm a simple woman. Once again, I love a man with problems.
Yeah. And once they go to therapy, everything is ruined, right?
Yeah. And don't go to therapy. Unless you're trying to make your workers work 12-hour days, then maybe go to therapy a little bit. Preferably before the book starts, so I don't have to deal with that.
What a wild conversations these are.
Yeah.
Look, it is what it is.
My feminism does tend to float away a little bit with romance. With heterosexual romance, it has to. Sapphic romance, whole different story.
Yeah.
What have you been watching?
She's laughing because she watched it with me last night. It was a fever fucking dream. We finally watched the Teen Wolf movie. By the way, we absolutely love the show. It's my childhood. It's what I grew up with. Yeah. Those were my until today. I remember when I was at school the episode when Allison died came out, and I had it spoiled on Facebook, and then I rushed home and watched it and sobbed, and then just went to watch edits and sobbed, and until today I know the words she said when she was dying, and it was everything to me. As far as I'm concerned, the movie does not exist.
No.
The thing is, we knew it would not be good. Yeah. I personally had zero expectations. I was ready for a lot of things. Somehow, I end up still incredibly disappointed and upset.
The funniest thing about it was this movie was clearly for the fans, because there was no way anyone who did not watch the show could understand the movie. Mm-hmm. But also, it was not for the fans at all, because it gave us absolutely nothing in character-wise. Like,
no. They somehow managed to ruin 90% of the characters.
Yeah. They took Stydia away from us, which is Stars and Lydia, who was an epic slow burn in the show, and barely got together by the end, and then decided that now they're not together 15 years on. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Scott gets his dead girlfriend straight out of purgatory, where apparently they have lip filler and Botox, by the way, which is nothing against people who use that, but it is quite jarring to see someone who's supposed to be who was last dead as a 16-year-old with very big lips.
She was older. She was around 18, 19.
Oh.
But still, and it's little what I really do love is that she had her manicure from when she died, yet her short hair became extremely long. She got a whole new face.
Well, and there's something going on down there in that purgatory. I want to know what it is.
And now she's with Scott, who's 30-something, 33, 32.
Yeah.
Cool. And however, you know what?
She died being Isaac's girlfriend. They weren't together when...
She doesn't remember.
They weren't together when...
They weren't together. They were starting to be together.
Yeah, and Isaac left because of the grief of Allison was too much. He went to Paris, and he should be glad he never came back. Isaac LaHaye is somewhere eating a croissant, and I respect him for that. I bet most of the cast wish they would have stayed where they were instead of coming back for this.
I mean, as I said, as long as I'm concerned, does not exist. I do have to respect Scott manifestation skills, because at the beginning he was wistful to have someone to share his life with and child like kids, so he brought his girlfriend back from the dead, and his friend died, so he adopted his kid. And I mean, like, cool, like that's one way to do that.
And also, his girlie was dead for 15 years, and it turned out all they needed was a little bit of ash and a sword to get her back.
Yeah.
It was just, it was wild. And also they introduced swearing into the Teen Wolf universe.
What? So every other line nuts. Like, I'm nuts so shocked.
Thank you, Shelley Hennig, for your service.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, every time they said some swear word, I was like, hold up, like my brain needed to reboot. Like, it's just so such a weird thing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't think there is any Teen Wolf fan who enjoyed that film. So good luck if you haven't watched it yet.
The
you
best
may
part
need
of
therapy after.
Yeah, I still want to sue someone for it. The best part of the movie were the flashbacks.
The best part about the movie is that it feels like a movie.
Except it doesn't feel like a movie. It feels
like a
fever dream.
It doesn't feel like a movie. Somehow it won down Harry Styles instead of one up him.
Yeah. And that says like a lot.
Yeah.
What else are we watching?
Well, Grey's. Let's not even talk about Grey's. I'm sure you're all really bored of hearing about my adventure with Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
Sex Lives of College Girls. I said it right.
She said it right, y'all. Amazing. What a day. I'm very proud.
Yeah. For those who do not know, it does have a sapphic couple in it. Well, it has a lesbian character in it. I wouldn't say a sapphic couple, because there are several sapphic couples with the same lesbian character. She doesn't have great choice when it comes to picking her girlfriends.
No.
I'm not particularly feeling the relationship that she's in at the minute.
No.
However, I do love them all very much.
Yes.
It's hard for me now because Mindy Kaling, or Carlin, however you say her name.
Mm-hmm. Kaling.
She's doing some weird shit with Velma. The less said, the better.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
That's probably it. Well, we've been watching other movies to get prepped for this episode.
Yes, we have.
So let's get into it. So why did we even decide to do this episode?
We noticed a trend that if we got a sapphic movie, it more often than not tended to be either a period piece or a historical. And we was like, why might that be? And I suppose there are two sides to this, because on the one hand, it's really great to see people introducing queerness into a historical sphere where we kind of feel ignore that it ever existed, because we was overlooked in history. Queer people were often overlooked, especially queer women, because they were all women were overlooked in general. So, and then we add queerness to the mix. But then there's also the fact that without getting modern, happy, open relationships with rights and with comfort, we are only really getting stories of suppression. So there are two sides to that coin.
Mm-hmm. And also because of it, those movies are also extremely white.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's historical. And as we all know, people of color did not exist in history. It's a new thing that woke people introduced to the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Disappeared one day.
Yeah.
So the first historical film we watched was ages and ages ago. We watched Ammonite.
To be fair, it was Kate Winslet and Saoirse Ronan. Like,
yeah,
anything with them, I perhaps had high expectations because I thought anything with them would be perfection, especially when they were together. I was wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's about, who was it about? Let me check.
It's based on real person. The girlie that Kate Winslet played was a real person. She was like big in like finding ammonites and stuff.
Fossil hunter. Yeah. Mary Annan. But apparently, like, that story never existed. Like,
no,
there is no proof.
Like, there's no evidence that she was with anyone. So they made up this sapphic story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which apparently her family did not like or something.
Well, it's a bit strange. Like, it's kind of like the equivalent of Larry Shippers these days, Harry and Louis from One Direction. Like, there's, like, of course we need more sapphic representation, but is, like, redefining someone's identity when they're not here to speak about it themselves really the way to go? I don't know.
Yeah. Especially when we're talking about, like, real person who clearly was big in her field.
Yeah.
So instead of like focusing on her achievements and all that she brought, we created a love story that did not exist.
Yeah.
Like, if it would be heterosexual relationship, I would probably be extremely upset. Let's be honest. It's just because Saoirse Ronan wrote her face. That was really what I wanted.
Yeah. Which is another thing altogether. Because especially if there was no evidence she was with anyone, that means that she never chose to represent herself as a sexual creature.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then you get her in this film, 69 in, which on the one hand, good for her, but on the other, this was a real person.
Yeah.
And now she's remembered for 69 and like, I don't know much about her other than she likes rocks and she's 69 with Saoirse Ronan.
But what an achievement in life, though.
What an achievement, yeah.
Like, yeah.
She is Ross Geller's worst nightmare, let's say that. He could never.
No, he truly could not.
But the film, in general, I kind of could see what they were doing with it. But another quality of sapphic movies is that they don't really talk very often to each other.
Honestly?
There was not like one full conversation in this film that I can recall.
No,
lots of wistful, pining glances, but mostly just big moments of silence and boredom. I was very bored.
Yeah.
I cared little for either of the characters. They didn't give me much. Fiona Shaw made an appearance, and we always love a Fiona Shaw moment.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about her.
Yeah.
And she
apart
is
from that,
the queen.
She is, yeah. Apart from that, it gave us nothing.
Mm.
There was nothing kind of transcendentary about it, like...
Did she even, I remember, like, Saoirse's character invited Kate to live with her. Did she stay or not?
In the end, didn't she go back?
Yeah, so they didn't even end up together, right?
No, but I remember Kate Winslet being in a house, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's all I remember. And I don't remember if they stayed together or not. Yeah, right.
Because I think she was married, right, and she was depressed, so they sent her to the seaside, which was a thing back then, like, fresh air will cure
you. She wasn't depressed, she was melancholic,
or right, however you she lost a
pronounce
child,
the word.
Was it?
Yeah, she miscarried. And then she was suffering with melancholy. How do you pronounce it? I'm saying it wrong.
No, melancholy.
How?
You said it right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, this is how they cure shit in history. So pardon me for assuming how they cure other shit in Portrait of a Lady on Fire. We're going to get to it.
Right. No, but we should get to Portrait first, because in my opinion, Ammonite was...
Because that's what happened. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I feel like I know what you're saying.
Ammonite, for me, was like... trying to accomplish the same thing that Portrait did, but they didn't. They couldn't do it. They didn't manage it the same way.
I remember that happening because Portrait came out. It was huge. Mm-hmm. And then Ammonite was the world to come came out. And right, other like small indie historic things. I know they tried to like recreate what the Portrait brought, but missed 100%. Like,
yeah,
did not get it. America.
Well, the first reason being that Portrait included queer people in the creation of it. Queer actors, probably. I'm not sure about behind the scenes, but like, as far as we know, Kate Winslet and Saoirse Ronan have never like aligned themselves with the queer community before.
No.
That was probably the first difference.
Yeah.
It is in French, if you haven't watched it yet, so you'll have to deal with subtitles. However, for me, it was worth it 100%. Like, I'm not a big subtitle girly, and it's not always easy to put on like a long-winded historical at the end of the day. That's not in the language, you know. But it was really good.
It was really
good. I loved it a lot.
It was really like pleasing to the eye. The colors, just the camera shots. It was really, yeah. It was breathtaking. It really was.
And again, that's what Ammonite felt like it was trying to do, like the seascape in the background. But it just wasn't the same. Like, there was just something really great about Portrait. The way that the characters interacted, there was no interaction in Ammonite.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't, except for the sex. What else? Well, first of all, what's it about? It's about a painter who is hired to in France to go and paint somebody, a woman's portrait, because she's about to get married to someone in Milan. But she's asked to do it in secret because she won't pose, and other painters have had an issue with painting her portrait. Isn't that even the premise like makes me happy?
Mm-hmm.
There's something so beautiful about somebody admiring someone so they can paint them, like looking at the details so closely.
Which, by the way, the camera work when I keep forgetting their name, when the painter was watching Eloise, like you could tell exactly which part of her face she was studying to paint. Even though there was a little bit of voiceover over that eventually told you, like, you could tell right away, which was extremely, like, just chef's kiss. Honestly, it was very good in that sense, too.
Yeah.
And it wasn't sexualized, that was it. It was just appreciated of her unique beauty.
Yeah. That's the thing, like, there was a clear progression from doing what she's here to do, to falling in love, and them eventually being intimate in a sexual way. Like, it wasn't like they're just not gonna talk for an hour and then maybe they'll fuck. Like, you could see how it developed, and it was that was the most beautiful part of it.
Yeah.
And also, because it's a female painter, it has to be through the female gaze.
It was. I feel also what they did and what Americans don't understand is that they didn't, the movie wasn't like glamorized in any way. Because especially Hollywood, they tend to put everything like so the cookie cutter beauty and sexuality and all of that. And because it's a very European movie, and one of the instances was that both of the women had armpit hair.
Yes.
Which was very historically accurate.
Yeah, pubic hair as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there were no men in the film. So let's start there.
There were no men. That was amazing. That was great. That was the best part of it. Yeah.
That feels more like what a historical fiction about queer women should be like. And you can kind of tell the difference between a historical movie about queer women made for queer women and a historical movie about queer women made for straight people, I feel like.
Yeah. And just the representation points.
Yeah.
Without actually being genuine about what you're creating.
Yeah.
With American movies and media, it's very clear that they're doing it for profit because capitalism. Well, this movie was very small movie and went to some festivals. But it was clear it was very much a piece of art than a means for profit.
Yeah. It really was. One of my favorite parts about it was the abortion. So aside from the two heroines, there is a maid living in the house, and they form a really cute friendship over the film because, first of all, it's three women in a house, just like they like society can fuck off at that point because it's just three women in a house. But also the maid the maid is pregnant, or according to Ivy, she's training to get her period.
Okay, so hold up. I said it before, like, I trained myself not to need subtitles for English. I was very proud about it, so I really struggle with subtitles now. I watched this movie, like, at 3-4 sittings because I couldn't say it for 2 hours with subtitles. I'm not used to it anymore. So, of course, it led to a confusion that I was expecting, and which was that they were talking about getting period. And Girlie asked her if she wants a kid, and then I did not catch the answer. I did not understand. And suddenly they were just throwing the girlie on a beach like a beach ball. And I was like, why are they bullying her, first of all? And then I saw, like, oh, she's trying to, like, then she was hanging there on the ceiling of that. Oh my God, did she hang herself? And I thought, like, oh, she's like doing some workout or something. And you know what? It's historical fiction. Again, they thought like bloodletting was a good way to heal cancer or like broken bones. I don't know what they thought was medicine back then. And I thought it was like something, oh, like people with anorexia, they're weak. Their body is so weakened. They need to like gain the strength and nutrients again to get their period. So I thought, oh, okay, it's similar like that. She's living on an island in the middle of nowhere. It's possible. So I thought, oh, so they're training her to get her period so she can have babies because historical fiction. I did not get. Also, you cannot lose a child because you're running. Like, there's no abortion in that.
Heavy exercise was thought to be dangerous for pregnant women,
right?
Like horse riding.
Yeah, but
they didn't have any horses, so they did the next best thing.
Yeah, which was her trying to run.
Yeah.
Which in my head does not connect. You see, the medicine was different.
Yeah,
that's why I was so incredibly confused.
I love how that's not connecting, but training for her period is.
I did not sketch the fact that she's pregnant already. So there were no men. I forgot about their existence. Look.
I get it.
Okay.
I get it. They were trying to induce a miscarriage, but before that even happened, like, there had to be a conversation about periods. And I realized that's just something we never get, even in modern day films. Like, nobody ever talks about periods. And I always wonder, like, what did they do in historical times without, like, tampons and sanitary towels and stuff? So it was like, I really loved that they included it. Like, it was really for women,
yeah,
or people with uteruses, at least in that instance. Like, and really, like, a raw telling of how women lived back in that time.
But again, I have to sign it to the fact that it's European made, because
yeah,
like Americans, that's the thing, that they glamorize everything, and this is very raw and real.
Yeah. And then there is an abortion scene, which is really important now, because obviously, like, America especially are facing a really big threat to their reproductive rights in general. So, like, the idea that abortions would stop if they banned them, and then seeing that an abortion happened in, like, the 1800s without any of the modern medicine that we have now, that's really important. Abortions have always been necessary and have always happened.
And you know what, like, the fact that, because the girl went to some woman to for the abortion, and the woman had her grandchildren there, she had a baby on the bed where Sophie lied. So, like, the whole shot of Sophie in pain as the abortion was happening, with the baby crawling to her and, like, holding her finger, I cannot describe how it made me feel, but it was so, it made me stop for a bit, because just that idea of having the baby there, there had to be, like, reason behind it. I would love to pick the director's brain for it, because holy fuck, it was very chilling.
Yeah, just the idea that that's what she could have had, but also the idea that that baby being there didn't make her question it, didn't make her change her mind.
Yeah.
And there was never a moment of doubt there.
Yeah, and it wasn't like she hates children, because she was like looking at the baby and smiling at it through the pain, and like humoring it when it wanted her finger. So while she was stopping that similar thing for having for herself, it was really, really chilling. Yeah.
It was very powerful. I was like, I went there for the sapphic romance, but the fact that we also got that as well was really important. Aside from that, the romance was just very beautiful.
It was very, very soft.
They were sexual without being sexualized. I think that's what it was as well. Where most historical fictions focus on the facts that this happens to, has to happen in, like, the public's the private sphere, because that's how women were confined. Like, so that's kind of the, I guess, that's kind of like the pull towards it as well, the forbidden love aspect, and also, like, the limitations. It all, but, like, they didn't have that so much because there were no men and no other people around except for just the maid, who was very wonderful.
It really was. Like, they had, like, a week or two of what they could have had today.
Yeah.
Like, having the opportunity, and of the, because they were so closed off from the world and their society, that they could live in their sort of made up reality where they went to sleep next to each other and woke up to each other.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was really, really fantastic.
I think that's what made it as well, because, like, they had their own society on this little island. There was no one else. Like, nobody asked any questions about it. Like, they were allowed to just be there, whereas most historical fiction focuses on the suppression and the restrictions that women face. They kind of got the opposite just for a few weeks, but there was always that looming knowledge that Heloise would have to get married and go to Milan, which is what happened eventually. But there was just, in those moments where they were together, there was no, like, talk of, like, there was no oppression.
Even they didn't have to hide in the house. They didn't have to, like, suddenly jump from each other or let go of the hand when someone else walked in, because that was just wasn't there, and was really it sort of like made you forget about with them, like forget about how what the world really was by then and what they could and could not do.
And I think that's how you know it was made for queer people, because it the story wasn't about how oppressed and restricted they were. It was about what happens when those restrictions aren't there for a bit. Whereas with the other films we watched, they were always there. They were always repressed. They were always oppressed.
Yeah.
In that way.
The ending made me sob very much. Yeah. That was the most heartbreaking thing I've ever seen. It was clearly several years after, because there was a portrait of Eloise with her child.
Yeah.
But she had a book, and there was clear page 28, which on that page, the painter painted her nude portrait for Eloise when she left. When I saw the page number, I guessed, and I just started bawling my ass out.
And there is something so, like, packed with sexuality and sensuality about the way her finger is in that book.
Yes.
Like, the way that they managed the whole film without sexualizing the women, and but then managed to pack, like, so much sensuality, that was, like, the female gaze, like, summed up. Like, the way her finger is in those pages is something so personal to me.
Because they managed to create intimacy without the sex in the center of it.
Without nudity or sexualization. It's just every part of it. I could just analyze the shit out of that film from beginning to end.
Especially the last scene, which I have to talk about. Like, it was the last time the painter has seen her, which was an orchestra, which was orchestra she talked about and she played to her. So that was around, like, it had to be like 2 minutes. I forgot to look it up. It was just this very long, intense shot that went slowly closer to Eloise's face, where she, like, as she felt all that, all what she, like, had and missing. And it was, oh my God, it was just 2 minutes of that or so. It was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Just, it made you sit on the edge of your seat, like, waiting. You were expecting something to happen, and nothing did. She just burst into tears, and it was perfection. The acting, holy fucking shit.
Oh, God. It was so
absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
And also just the spacing in that scene. Like, they were sat on the balcony, and there was this, like, abyss between them where the, like, lower seating and the stage was, and it was just, like, looking between that, just, like, that connection that they'll always have but can't have anymore. There was chills. It was so good. So if you are looking for a sapphic historical to watch, this is the one that we recommend, because the other ones we've watched haven't been quite as great as that one.
I started watching The Worlds to Come with Vanessa Kirby because I love Vanessa Kirby, and I thought, like, if I'm going to get her a sapphic, sure. However, I watched like 15 minutes of it, and then HBO took it away from me, which sounds about right, So now I did not finish the movie.
No. I can't. It doesn't look like my cup of tea.
Yeah.
Too many men involved.
Especially Ben Affleck's brother was there, and we know what he is, so it was just
no, it doesn't look like my cup of tea at all. It looks too grim and, like, dull for me. Guys, historicals don't always have to be, like, dull. You can put in color palettes there. Doesn't have to be like that.
And then we watched Carol.
We watched Carol. It's a period drama with Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara. Honestly, it comes highly recommended by a lot of people. A lot of people talk about it. It's set in what, like, post-war New York, I feel like. Or is it pre-war? I'm not sure.
No idea.
I think like late 50s maybe. We didn't enjoy it.
At all.
I don't, yeah. Kate Blanchett has never claimed to be a queer woman, but she's always somehow queerer in interviews than, well, let me rephrase that. She was straighter in this movie than I've ever seen her before. And she was playing a sapphic in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was no reason for these two people to be drawn together. Like, they met at a department store, which was quite nice, but I mean, they didn't really have much conversation. The first time that Rooney Mara went to Carol's house, she was fighting with her boyfriend, her husband even, and I'd be like, well, I'm going to go now, because
yeah.
Her husband was quite clearly a bit aware about Carol's sexuality, and they had a kid, and yeah.
I didn't even feel any connection or like chemistry between the two.
No,
there was nothing for me to root for. And once again, it really ended with them being in pain.
Rooney Mara was not like queer at the beginning of the film. She had a boyfriend, like, there was nothing to suggest she was gonna be queer. But then somehow she immediately like fell in love with Carol, which I get it. It's Cate Blanchett, but like there was just like so many other historical sapphic films, there was no fucking conversation.
No,
you like, I think they think that lesbians just fall in love out of pure lesbianism. Actually, we quite like conversation too, as much as the next person. Like. Not that I'm a lesbian. I say we. I'm not a lesbian, but like as a queer woman.
Yeah.
I don't just go around like falling in love with women just for the sake of it. I mean, I do because they're women. But like.
I wouldn't get on a road trip with them just because they're women.
No, they go on a road trip.
Without knowing anything about them.
Yeah, she kind of leaves her boyfriend and her boyfriend's like, oh, you should stay with me. Why are you going away with some lady?
Which was like, very valid point.
Very valid point, actually. Yeah. The heterosexual made some points.
Yeah. And men made some valid points.
But that was another thing. Like, it was soaked in men. Like, it started with her and her boyfriend and some other guy tried to kiss her as well. I don't know who that
yeah.
was. The guy who plays the villain in Umbrella Academy. And then they are on this road trip and Carol finds out that he's trying to like take the child away.
Yeah.
Trying to go to court about like this sexuality. Like, and then people are following them and she has a gun, and it was all rooted in homophobia and misogyny, and that's not appealing to queer women. Like, there's a way to do the forbidden love thing, which Portrait of a Lady proved, without making it about all the people who hated queer women in that era.
And that's why it's so shocking to me. Like, this, like, a lot of queer people are like, this is the movie.
No, this was heterosexual porn, is what this was. Like, there was nothing romantic or central about their relationship. They fell into it, they fell out of it. Like, there was no reason to root for them. We were never given a reason. It seemed like Carol just kind of picked her out and was like, come back to my place, and we never knew why. What appealed, because she was a wealthier woman, she was a older woman, and Rooney Mara was there in a Santa hat in a department store wearing quite rubbish clothes. So it was just like, and she'd also been with Sarah Paulson, who was the best part of the film, by the way. So none of it, we were never given the motives, we were never given why. It seems like Carol just liked to pick up women. Like, I don't know. I don't know. It didn't resonate with me. I didn't feel like it was made for me as a queer woman. I don't get it. I don't get the hype. I don't get why so many people talk about this film.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
I think that's when I noticed like the differences between a movie made for queer people with queer people and a movie made for straight people by straight people. The director was called Todd, guys.
That's all you need to know. It was done by Weinstein Company, like, production. So, like, you know, you know all you have to know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really it. Yeah, I think that's and the difference is that, like, straight creators, people who don't really understand queerness, kind of rely on the forbidden love of the, like, historical setting to do all the work for them. And they kind of neglect the characters, like they are just two queer women and that's all they are. But there is just so much more depth in stuff like Portrait of a Lady.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And also that's funny because, like, even though they were obviously homosexuality was not allowed, not legal, not like condoned in Carol, so they had that freedom to go on a road trip and not be questioned about it. They were still somehow more restricted than the women in Portrait.
And the thing is, because there's no movie done by big Hollywood productions that are, like, set today, we would probably even wouldn't have to really talk about this because that's all the big budget movies with suffix that we have. Then you have Happiest Season, which we all know. And also because we just have nothing to really choose from.
Nothing readily available anyway. Like even Portrait, that wasn't it wasn't made to be a big budget Hollywood blockbuster. It was made for the art. It was made to be in festivals.
And it was so good because it really filled out what was the part in the industry that was missing. And then we're going to have Evelyn Hugo. That is really just the same thing. It's also like like old Hollywood where they have to hide their relationship. They're in the two heterosexual marriages, so the two queer couples can be together. It's really the same story, just done differently and better.
Even with books, like, I feel like only really in the last 2 years are big publishers publishing, like, contemporary romance for sapphic people, by sapphic people. Like, Delilah Green and... I'm not going to count One Last Stop because...
No.
The character in that one was from another period, and it just kind of she was Chinese, and it just completely ignored that factor in the story.
Yeah. Only before pandemic or during pandemic we started getting on voices because that really was that uproar in publishing in general. Thank fuck. But I'm still kind of missing the, like, authentic queer stories in the sense that they are very similar with the storyline and happy endings. So, like, of course, with heterosexual ones, straight relationship, there is a big variety. So, like, you have different kind of pain, you have different outcome, you have different happy ending, which not queer stories, we don't have that yet. Because I believe there is a difference between authenticity and good representation. And people are often like, you know, there is the barrier gay trope, of course. We all hate it. But it can, if it's done with, like, authenticity, it can be actually very fucking good. Like, I don't mind if the main character dies as long as I get fed enough and the story it makes sense.
Yeah, the barrier gay, like, comes from, like, straight media killing the only diverse character in the thing, but now people use it against queer works that kill queer characters as though there isn't a whole cast of diverse characters in that book.
Yeah.
So that's a problem as well, kind of like adapting phrases that come from straight works being oppressive and diminishing diverse characters to, and then transitioning it to queer works. Like,
and there is much more, people are more critical about queer media, which I know I am too, because, again, there is so very little of it that when you finally get something, you want it to fit you perfectly, but nothing will ever fit you perfectly, right? That because it's not your story. You are not telling the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's interesting. Some, like, there's still a lot of type, the same type of queer character as well. Like, you see less butch or mask, like, queer lesbians around in media mm-hmm. still. It's still very much, like, dominated by femininity in that sense. Like, queerness still has to be palatable or, like, still has to fit in a certain box, still has to look a certain way.
Yeah. You know, weirdly, like, Grace and Station ID gave me the best Suffolk characters I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
Like, especially in the latest season, there is the non-binary Dr. Kai. I'm absolutely obsessed with them. Like, oh my god.
I'm so excited for them.
Yeah. And their relationship with one of the women, like,
oh my god,
it's so good. And in Station, that's it, like, Station 19 has a couple, and currently, like, one of them are going through, Maya has a lot of mental issues, and Karina is someone who grew up with a father that had bipolar disorder that he never wanted to treat. He absolutely didn't want to think, like, It was really difficult to grow up for her in that, of course. And now she has a wife that's going through mental issues, and it's extremely painful and raw. And if that would be the only thing, you'd be like, oh, this is terrible representation. But it's actually very fucking good. Because that's the real story. Yeah.
Yeah. I love messy characters. I love messy women. I think even with, like, straight women, they're held to a certain standard in media. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm thinking, of course, of my wife Nesta Archeron from the Court of Thorn and Roses series, because she chose not to take care of her sister. She chose not to allow herself to be put in the role of mother when their mothers passed away. She's then, people hate her for that. Like, and yeah, she's, like, hostile, and she's not always a nice character, but that makes she has reasons behind that. And Why should all characters have to be good characters? Like, why should they have to be kind characters, especially with women?
I read on Twitter, like, 2 days ago, do you really want unlikable female characters? Or do you want, like, women that are supposed to be unlikable? And I'm saying it with...
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Are actually just badass and going out of their way to, like... save the world and stuff. These are two different things. And
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know what? I'm going to talk about my girl Wanda, because she's one of the most layered characters I've ever seen, in the sense, like, a lot of things are happening to her, and each of her actions has a very clear reason.
Yeah.
And that's, you know what? Women can be dimensional. We can be layered. We can have a lot of trauma and deal with it differently. And that's what makes a good character.
Mm-hmm. But it's not what makes a good woman, because women are supposed to be, they're supposed to handle things with grace. They're supposed to be sensitive and kind, and they're never supposed to get angry about things and never supposed to get upset. They have to be a mother-like person. And the standards then that are held to women are twice as bad with queer characters, because there's so little representation.
And
so
we're not talking characters... about even, like, women of color who have... That's a completely different conversation, where we're talking about rage and anger. But female rage done by men and done by women, who's the difference? You always, like, in movies done by women, she's always quiet and, like, has this intense stare and that one tear. And again, I'm gonna point out Grace, like, they lose it. They fucking scream. They throw stuff. Yeah. Yes. You know what? Like, even me growing up next to my brother, we both have pretty severe anger issues. And you have to send the anger out somehow, right?
I was supposed to shut up, don't even make a sound, nobody wants to listen to that. While my brother was going across the apartment throwing stuff, he is constantly like punching walls and throwing stuff, and everybody ignored it. It's fine, he's just boys being boys.
Yeah, absolutely. And even in like portrait, Heloise was considered difficult because she wouldn't let anybody paint her portrait before the female painters came. Because she didn't want to get married. She didn't want to marry a stranger. And that was considered being difficult.
Yeah. And she didn't like to smile. She didn't want to smile for the portraits.
Yeah. And that, so like in that context, she's like defying the patriarchy in like the smallest but also biggest of ways, which was really beautiful. But it's interesting to see that even now. Like, even now, I have a resting bitch face. I'm now thinking it's probably part of my autism. Like, I'm like my face goes very like slack, and I'm not really thinking about it when I'm just walking because I'm always thinking in my head. So my face is always quite serious.
Yeah.
And the amount of times I've been told to smile by strangers, by men. So even then, like those qualities that difficult women were said to have then, they still exist now. Like it's funny how traditions like that are still carried on hundreds and hundreds of years later.
And then you have a Captain Marvel movie where she's told to smile and be and supposed to take it, and then we're fucking upset when she stole his bike. Or like in deleted scenes, she like dislocated her wrist or something. I mean, I wanted that in. I think she should cause him more pain, but you know, we're just supposed to sit and take it and take all the all that stuff.
Yeah. That's why for our generation, like the YA books had such an impact, like Hunger Games and Divergent, because those women were clearly transgressing from a society even worse than ours. And like, thank God we grew up with those women.
Honestly, it's one of the, you know, I still think back because I was raised in very like traditional family, and the girls are supposed to clean and prepare the table and help grandma cook and bring the men their water and stuff. And I was like, how is it that I, of the entire family, am so different? And you know what? I have to give it up to the books where the women always like stood up to the society and the pressure they were under, because that's what I was reading since I knew how to read. And those are the books that I was reading. And it really is, in a way, extremely eye-opening to, without even like, only now I can kind of connect it to it.
I mean, I guess they've always kind of been there, but on the side. Like, I read a lot of like Famous Five books growing up, and like there was a character there who was a girl but she wanted to be a boy. Like, I can't remember what her name was now, but there was always, they were always there. But I feel like we were one of the first generations where we were allowed to act that way. We were allowed to like say actually no. And maybe it wasn't like taken well, but we have more freedom to do that now, I think, than ever before. But there is still so many, there are still so many ways where it's tried to be taken away, especially for even more marginalized people, like people of color and queer people, trans people especially.
Yeah.
Do you have any tea?
I do.
What's the tea, Ivy?
So we have, of course, first, let's, once again, Raven Kennedy and Carissa Broadbent, indie writers, were flagged by Amazon for, because their books were pirated several times on internet, so they were like, Kindle versions of their books were like deleted from Amazon, and their author profiles were like somehow stopped.
And of course, that started once again the conversation about piracy and pirating books and how it can affect very really people's livelihood. And then we had a girlie who said, I don't care about poor people. I'm like, cool, good for you.
She said, I don't care if you're from a third world country or you're poor.
Yeah.
And I know this because unfortunately she was a mutual of mine who I did not know would come out with all this. So I kind of saw it firsthand.
Shocker. People started bombing her book with 0 or 1 star reviews. Phenomenal. So she went on to start a bunch of profiles on Goodreads and just gave herself several 5-star reviews. So that's quite funny.
And she also made a list of problematic creators.
Oh, yeah. I still didn't see it and I want to read it.
Yeah.
I kind of find
with
it.
Reasons. This girl clearly has too many time on her hands because she tweeted a lot that day. And she kept trying to act like nothing had happened. Like, she kept tweeting and people were caught tweeting. And it was just quite embarrassing for all involved. Because piracy is bad. And but saying you don't care about poor people or people in third world countries is not the take you think it is. Like... Mm-hmm. Piracy is bad because it's companies and websites steal your work and allow other people to steal it. Mm-hmm. Piracy is not bad because some people just don't have access to books, and that unfortunately that's the only way they can get it. And it's never good to steal an author's work, but I would so much rather people in third world countries steal books than not read them at all, if that's if those are the two options.
Yeah.
The my issue
problem,
was with
of
fucking
course, is Amazon.
My issue is with fucking Americans who pirate, like, who went there to pirate, like, Colleen Hoover books. Pirate her away, by the way. Don't give a shit about her anyways. But, like, then go to other authors and steal their books, because that's when it becomes a problem. Like, it's not the bestsellers who are suffering.
Mm-hmm.
They're fine. It's not... Like, it in the end, it's indie authors who are suffering, because that, like, with a publisher, if that happened with the publisher and their work was pirated, it would be the publisher's job to sort that out with Amazon. We don't have any representatives. Like, if our work is stolen and we're then taken off KU, our profits are coming straight down. Like, that's our money coming straight out of our pocket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because of TikTok, like, piracy is very much like that fun pastime, like, quirky trade and stuff. Yeah. How many times I got into fight with people and like, oh, they have writers make enough money. No, it's very little percentage of writers. It's the same with actors. Like, you see just the 5% of people that make money from that art. The rest is struggling just as anyone else. Mm-hmm. And stopping their only source of income is actually incredibly, like, fucked up.
Even by supporting the websites that allow you to do that instead of, like, reporting them is part of the problem.
Mm.
Because if anybody's work, who no matter what author it is on another website, that means that your work is no longer exclusive to Amazon if you're enrolled in KU, and that's breaking their contract, which is why they take it down in the first place. So
which Amazon, again, like, fuck up. Of course, the big, big company is the one that...
The thing about Amazon is that they're looking for any excuse to do that anyway. They love taking destroying livelihoods. They love taking them down. But it's also the best place to sell your books as an indie author. Mm. It's the place. So now, of course, people are boycotting KU. So people's KU reads are going down and we're still losing money.
Yeah.
That ain't the way to go. Like, support your authors the real way. Like, don't boycott KU. Like, people,
it won't hurt Amazon. I'm telling you that. It won't, literally, Amazon doesn't give a fuck.
If you can buy from another retailer and the author asks you to do that, then do that.
Mm-hmm.
If they promote their Amazon, that means that's their source of income. Go on it. Use Amazon. Like, it's fine. It's not the best place. It's not the most moral place to get your books from, but it's also the place where a lot of us earn our money from. Like, It's where our financial stability comes from. Not mine. I ain't got no financial stability. If I had, it might be from Amazon, lad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, another rant about piracy. Nothing new, nothing changed.
Nothing
new,
nothing old. Yeah. Okay. So next week, we will be talking about how mostly Netflix takes real life crime stories and turn them into something it should not be in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mostly about exploiting how the film industry exploits people's real life people's trauma.
Yeah.
Manipulates it, changes the storyline for money. Like, so we're talking Jeffrey Dahmer, Marilyn Monroe, the recent movie that came out about that, Pamela Anderson. We shall be examining that.
Yes.
And it was Valentine's Day yesterday. We're putting out an article.
Yes.
We will have put out an article by now about what we recommend for Valentine's Day, what books, what queer books, films, movies. Let's spread the queer love. And we also released a really great article by Chloe Kettle last week about imposter syndrome as a trans author, as an author in general, as a woman, and how that is reflected in her book, Ransom to Love. So if you're looking for new content and can't wait every Wednesday, be sure to visit our website.
Yes. And remember,
support women's rights.
But most importantly, support women's wrongs. Unless they're pirating books from indie writers for no reason whatsoever.
Unless they are in a lesbian film when neither women talk for a very long time.
Yeah. Exactly. And until next time, see you later, alligator.
In a while, crocodile. Thank you for listening to Swords and Sapphics. You can enjoy a new episode every Wednesday.
While waiting, you can visit our website, swordsandsapphics.com, and find lots of articles, interviews, and guest pieces.
Feel free to contact us with any requests, questions, or inquiries through a form on our website or directly to our email, swordsandsapphicspodcast@gmail.com.